Welcome to Blind Bargain's audio coverage of CSUN 2013. Brought to you by
the Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness is an essential professional resource and the journal of record on issues related to blindness and vision loss. Subscribe now and get immediate access to news from the field, current research and best practice information, and a calendar of events. For more information, go to www.jvib.org.
Now, here's J.J. Meadow.
We are here at CSUN 2013 with Mick Curran, co-developer of the NVDA ScreenRater, here to get some updates with the latest with NVDA and NVAccess. Mick, welcome back to Blind Bargains.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you very much.
Sure. Well, why don't we start off by getting people up to speed for maybe if you haven't tried out NVDA in a little while, what are some of the features or big things that have happened over the last year or two?
I'd say the first big thing was really, I think it was 2012.2 when we put together the installer and portable versions into one copy of NVDA. So now when you go to download NVDA, it's much easier. There's just one copy of NVDA. We sort of call it the launcher. And that, if you run it, it asks you whether you want to create a portable version or whether you want to install it onto your computer. So it just makes that a little bit easier. And even if you do choose to install it, at any time you can now, from inside the NVDA menu, you can make a portable copy on a USB key or whatever. Or even from a portable copy, say you're at someone else's house or something on their computer with your portable copy and they want you to install it, that's also possible now, right from that copy.
Sure.
And also with the installer, we've sort of embedded it inside NVDA now. So we got rid of the old installer, which had a few problems on some people's systems, certainly with deleting files and things. So we've sort of coded all that ourselves now inside NVDA, and that's also much nicer to use. Also related to that is now we have an automatic update system. So that means as long as you're running 2012.2 or higher, NVDA will now automatically tell you when there's an update and give you the option to upgrade automatically. It'll download it for you and install it. So it's going to be much easier for people to keep up with the latest and greatest NVDA as opposed to continuously having to look at the website all the time.
Right. So speaking of some of the latest, I mean, you've done a lot with, especially with the web, which always has been a huge focus for NVDA, one of its strong suits. How is the development going there as far as modern browsers and Web 2.0 and all sorts of things like that?
Yeah, look, we always try and keep tabs on the latest sort of web accessibility features. So whether that be ARIA, Accessible Rich Internet Applications Standard. So we're always working very closely with the browser vendors to make sure that they're doing their part to expose it to us, and then of course we're doing our part to expose it to the user. And so, you know, good examples of where this works well is, say, maybe Yahoo Mail. They've made their mail interface into what really now feels like a sort of an application, a desktop application, but really it is a web page still. But through, you know, clever use of ARIA and the work that we've done, Yahoo has done, and the browser vendors, blind people can't really tell the difference anymore,
right?
Hopefully, and you know, that's
sure.
The way Web 2.0, so-called, really should be.
Is there a specific browser? I know you collaborate a lot with the Mozilla Foundation. Do you still recommend Firefox, or have you extended support out now towards Chrome and IE a lot better?
I think we would still... we would still recommend Firefox, I think. It's just in general, it's just that little bit more performant, the accessibility features. I mean, if there is something that needs to be fixed, it'll get fixed probably a lot faster. They're actually now, they've sort of increased their release cycle as well. It's like every 6 weeks, so
yeah,
it's a lot faster now, so you'll get your latest security updates, even accessibility fixes and stuff a lot faster now.
Yeah, sure.
But of course we do understand that a lot of people are using IE, so we try and, you know, work on IE as much as we can where we can with our funding, etc. Obviously we'll work on the products where we have got funding agreements or whatever, because obviously we need to survive. But in general, we try and make sure that each browser, there's a, you know, good minimum requirements. Chrome is getting there, but a lot of the work, I have to say, is still, you know, we would like to have a, say, a closer collaboration with Google on this.
And I was going to say, is it on their end, or
yeah,
look, there's some things that maybe need to happen.
I think they're pretty happy to make it happen, but it'll take time for them to get there. What they're sort of doing is trying to make it as close to Firefox as possible, as far as the accessibility is concerned. So really, it's up to them to finish that work off, and we can fix things here and there, you know, where little things break. But we'd probably still recommend Firefox, then IE, then Chrome, I would say, as far as accessibility is concerned at the moment.
Sure. Also noticed, well, some last year and also kind of leading into this year, that support for a lot more hardware Braille displays and...
Yeah, that's true. So we added support for several of the HIMSS displays. Is that the Braille Sense?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And sorry, there's just so many Braille displays, and it's very hard to remember.
And they have different names in different
exactly,
countries.
Exactly, that's
and,
right.
Yep.
but even now, we're working on, just mentioning 2013.1, we're adding support now for serial displays. So... as much as we've avoided this in the past, it does seem as though there are a lot of people who still do have a serial display, and you know, with no USB, and don't have the money to upgrade, which is fair enough. So some people in our community are working very hard on that. I mean, we can do some of the work, obviously, but it's very hard. We need access to each display.
Right.
So if someone has a display and they have a bit of programming knowledge... that's really how it gets done.
But it definitely seems to be expanding. You got the Braille Note Apex on the mm-hmm. list now. The some of the
yes.
Pathmire displays.
Mm-hmm. That's right, exactly.
Also, noticed last year one of the big changes that kind of developed was the add-on system for NVDA.
Yes, so that also came when we did the whole work to integrate Portable and Installer. We thought we'd do the add-on system as well while we're there, and I think it's been a really great move. For us to spend time on that, because it's really allowed people to go out there and do whatever they, you know, it's amazing
there's
what kind of add-ons
yeah,
are out there.
There's several dozen out there now.
There are. I mean, look, we've always had support for what we called app modules and global plugins and mm-hmm. and things like that, which were a way for people to do it, but it wasn't really standardized in a nice little packaged way for the general user. You know, if you're a developer, you sort of knew how to do it.
Sure.
But for a general, I mean, look, you still need a developer experience to write these add-ons, but
right.
But distributing them has now become a lot easier. You can just put it up on the net in a special NVDA-add-on file, and people just go to their add-ons manager in under Tools in NVDA menu, or now with after 2012.3, they can just press enter on the add-on in Windows Explorer or on the website or wherever. And as long as the installed version of NVDA is running,
right,
it'll pick up that add-on and install it for you.
Are there tools, or is there tutorials for people who want to get into that? Or
yeah, we updated our developer guide on the website mm-hmm. To specifically mention that they should be making add-ons and exactly how to make them.
Are you looking at Python, or is there other ways to do it? Or
So the actual code will be in Python. Mm-hmm. Then there's one extra little file which just has some sort of metadata in it. And then you just zip it up and give it a different extension, NVIDIA-add-on extension. So it's quite simple to
well,
do.
Well, yeah, and it seems like there's all different types. It's you know, there's application-specific ones, there's mm-hmm. add-ons, there's voice add-ons, of course, the vocalizer voices have definitely...
Yeah, we probably should mention that as well.
Yeah.
So we started to work with a company. The first one was Tiflo Technia in Portugal, who... were able to get some good licenses for vocalizers, though, so that we could use them with NVDA. So some people there, Rui Batista and Rui Fonts, worked on getting it packaged as an add-on, and so now it's available from them, and of course many other companies around the world selling the vocalizer voices. And so it's really made easy. All you need to do is... you can download any of these. You download one add-on, which is sort of the vocalizer driver, so the,
right.
the bass driver. Then you can download any of the other voices you like, but of course to use it, you'll need to purchase a license from any company selling it, specifically for NVDA.
Yep.
And once you get the license file, I believe in the NVDA menu, you go under vocalizer and... then you install the license there. And the great thing about these vocalizer voices, now if people aren't familiar with them, they're exactly the same voices you get on your iPhone. And of course you might hear them in other GPS devices and things as
sure,
well.
Sure.
But look, you get access with the one price, which is €75, I think. Not sure what that is in US at the moment.
About 95 bucks.
Yeah, 95, yeah. Yep. You'll get at least 36 languages. There's certainly more than 36 voices because there's certainly more than one voice. So, for instance, your US, you get your Samantha and your Tom and all that. Of course, in Australia, we get Karen and Lee and all those cool voices. But the real good thing about this is that you can carry them around with you in your portable version of NVDA as well. You don't need to have... You know, previously when people have bought the RealSpeak voices or whatever, they were SAPI 5, you needed to install them on your system, on a particular system to use them. But now with the vocalizer, you can carry them on your USB key or whatever. There are some limitations with the license. I think it's three computers or something. But, I mean, in general, you know... You know, as long
and
as you don't
want
have one
a decent
USB
size flash drive,
exactly.
too, because
yeah. well, yes.
if you want more than a couple.
Exactly. However, there are the compact voices as well. So, one option is to just get all the voices, all the voices in the compact add on. And look, you know, the quality is still pretty good. I mean, to a lot of people, it beats eSpeak. And I mean, even on my iPhone, I tend to use the compact voices. Mm-hmm. I tend to prefer them over the higher quality ones anyway, but. So, you know, you've got that, and of course with NVDA's auto language switching already in most browsers and things like that, and Adobe Reader, you know, you can be reading multilingual documents with, a you know, really good high-quality voices, and it will automatically switch to the correct language when you need to.
Right, and well, sometimes people would pick the compact, too, for the responsiveness, but even the high-quality ones are... there really isn't much of a difference.
No, there
seems
really
on a
isn't.
Modern laptop.
And I mean, Look, to be honest, we'd be doing a lot of research with voices and stuff because we knew that people wanted higher quality voices. So we were working out, you know, the best deal and the best performance. And we'd had a look at a lot of the other voices on the market and had some talks with those companies. But really, to be honest, you know, the vocalizer voices were the most performant we'd seen. They really were. Possibly not the most cheapest with the licenses we've got at the moment, but... you know, that's just how things work. We have no control over that. But I think it's still a good deal in the sense that, you know, for someone who reads a lot of different languages, obviously the deal is great because you get over, you know, more than 36 voices. But I still can understand that it won't be interesting to some people who just want their one English voice. It is pretty expensive.
Sure. And is there still the deal going on too, or part of the price of that goes towards development? Or?
Exactly, that's right. So... if they're bought from Tiflo Technia, we'll get about 15%, and from any other worldwide from any other distributor around the world, I believe we'll get 10%. But you know, we're very appreciative of all that support because you know it allows us to continue doing NVDA. But also, what we have done is through some of the vocalizer funding we've got so far, we've done some specific work for vocalizer. So we've actually got Rui Batista from Portugal to do some specific work for us to improving the vocalizer driver, and he's also doing some real good work with Braille input and stuff as well.
Sure. So speaking of development and the latest with NVDA 2013.1, it's coming out.
It should be maybe the end of March or early April. We don't really want to rush it. Jamie and I have been very busy, especially. I mean, I'm here at CSUN. Jamie's got to go to Malaysia next week for. A seminar or something as well, and a few other things. So we've been really off our feet the last few months, but also keeping development in there as well. 2013.1 will be out soon. The major things in that are a new laptop layout. This one's a little bit debatable with users, but we certainly believe it makes much more sense the way it's been laid out now, because the problem with the old laptop layout was, although we were trying to stick to a sort of like a grid layout for the object navigation, there were too many exceptions, you know, so it really didn't work. So now we've tried to keep it more around the arrow keys in conjunction with the NVDA key. However, there are a few things to note that because of this, NVDA up arrow now with the laptop layout doesn't do, say, read line, and NVDA down arrow isn't say all. There are separate ones for those. But that was sort of a sacrifice that needed to be made to support all the other ones that make more sense to be around the arrow keys. Now, so look, people may like it, people may hate it. But first thing we always say is, if you have a chance of using the desktop layout on a laptop, if your laptop, say, has an FN key, please do that instead, because it is much more...
Sure, and many laptops, not all, as I've now learned, let you do the FN.
Exactly,
and
so
the
if you have the choice, yep, it's much better to do that. But other than that, try out the new laptop layout. It's, you know, look, if people really, really, really don't like it, over 50% of people don't like it, of course we will change our mind and change it back. But one thing we're trying to avoid is supporting both, because it just makes the work so much harder for us to support.
Well, you know, a lot of times if someone doesn't like it, it's because they're not used to it.
Yeah.
They haven't given a chance.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just like when you get a new computer, there's always a few days where you are mad at wherever the keys are that were not in the same place as the last time.
Exactly.
Right. PowerPoint support.
Yes. Now, so this is really exciting, because how this all started is, I mean, look, we know that people have wanted PowerPoint support for years, but the way we sort of managed our coding time and our funding and all that was, we tried to support the home user first. So for a long time, PowerPoint wasn't high on our priorities, but mm-hmm. It happened that when we went to the World Blind Union General Assembly last November, the Thailand Association of the Blind really wanted PowerPoint, and they said, look, we're going to contribute some funding to this. It's not the whole deal. They knew how much it really costed. But they chose to put in maybe, a tenth of the amount. And they sort of said, look, you know, is there anyone else willing to contribute to this? And it was quite amazing. There were quite a few blindness agencies who actually stood up and have contributed funding to make PowerPoint a reality. And it was really great for us. I mean, you know, it's... So, I mean, there's a few aspects of that. There's obviously everyone's going to get PowerPoint support.
Mm-hmm.
The other aspect is that we get more funding to continue our work in providing NVDA. But it's also the most important one, I think, is that it's a political move too. It's because all these blindness agencies now, and we're talking about RNIB, Vision Australia, NFB, one in Spain, a German one. Sorry, I can't remember the actual names of them, but
right.
Certainly from all over the world, these blindness agencies are now, you know, have stood up and said, well, look, we believe that we can get PowerPoint support in here. We, you know, feel that we can sort of part own the screen reader and actually make a contribution here and make sure that our clients, you know, mm-hmm. have access to a free screen reader.
So what does that support entail specifically, or how does it compare to what's currently available?
Well, so we're probably maybe 3/4 of the way through the support already. So people, if they're really interested, can try the NVDA snapshots, but, you know, be aware they are, you know, it's test code.
Yep.
Probably best to wait till 13.1 comes out. But look, you can... So when you open a presentation, you can use up and down arrow to move up and down the slides, and it will read the title of the slide. You can use tab and shift tab to move through the different shapes on each slide, so that's sort of like all the text boxes and all that, so it'll read the title, the type, and the text in those boxes. Of course, if you press enter or F2 on any of these, and look, these keyboard shortcuts that I'm talking about are standard PowerPoint shortcuts,
sure. Yeah.
But it's the fact that NVDA is now actually reading all the information, of course. Beforehand, it was completely silent. So you can edit the text. Probably the more important one that most people will be doing is pressing F5 to actually run the slideshow. So NVDA will then read the content on each slide. Pressing space or page up or down will move through each slide. That slide will obviously be shown on the screen or the projector or whatever, and NVDA will be reading the content out as well. What I just added last week as well is support for reading speaker notes. So in NVDA, in a PowerPoint slideshow running, you can press Ctrl+Shift+S, and that will now instead show your speaker notes to NVDA instead of the actual slideshow content for each slide. Now, remember though that on the projector, it'll still be showing the real slide. But if you're a a blind presenter, so you can be reading.
So you can be looking at the speaker notes the entire time, exactly. And nobody else will know.
Yes, that's right. I mean, look, usually we don't, you know, really condone or like to do sort of screen reader specific features, but mm-hmm. we did. But the only problem is for us for testing, there is a presentation view in PowerPoint that allows a sighted person to see the speaker's notes on one screen and have the slideshow on another screen. But getting a multi-monitor set up is usually pretty tricky. And I mean,
so that's essentially what you're recreating, right?
Exactly.
It's two different screens. One of the screens happens to
exactly. be. Exactly. But I guess the argument is also that sighted people who don't have multiple monitors will print out their speaker notes. And let's admit it, you know, it is sometimes hard to get access to an embosser for, you know, brailing or something on the spot.
Sure.
So why not have the speaker's notes?
Right, and even if you had it on a braille display, I mean, you have to alt tab back.
Well, exactly. Right, yeah, and that'll muck up the slideshow anyway for the projector.
So. Yeah, that wouldn't work.
So no, so what we've got, I think, is okay. So, you know, so that's what we've got in PowerPoint. You can read some basic, when editing PowerPoint slideshows, you can do some basic formatting. You can read the font and things like that.
If you're moving around the graphics and other presentation elements, will it tell you where you're putting them to? Or
You can get the location the normal way you would with NVDA objects.
So okay.
But we probably should be adding things like whether something overlaps or different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And look, people can come to us and tell us what they want. You know, we'd certainly like to see a lot more feedback from all the blindness agencies actually contributing this funding,
right.
Since it's their project. I'd like to know whether they're liking what they're seeing, and you know, we'll make up mm-hmm. fixes wherever possible. But you know, with what I know so far, we've tried our best in getting some, you know, pretty good right. PowerPoint support.
Does it extend out also to the free PowerPoint viewer? As far as
I don't know, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I might have a test of that. I actually wasn't aware of one. I knew of the Microsoft Word viewer, which
right.
we don't support. It's actually impossible, as far as I'm aware, because of the object model and stuff isn't installed along with that. But
yeah, it seems to me it might even be as simple as an association to make that work.
Possibly.
Would,
yeah, I don't know.
You can hope.
Yeah, 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 well, if people know, well, you know. Okay. But yeah, the PowerPoint viewer, yeah, we can have a look at that.
Right. And which versions of PowerPoint are you supporting?
We always try to support Office 2003 and upward. We're not going to go below that.
Through 13?
We haven't tested PowerPoint 13. Mm-hmm. I can talk to you about Microsoft Word 2013,
right.
Which 2012.3 did sort of support. Mm-hmm. There's probably a few things we need to do.
Right.
Just to quickly explain that, what happened was that Microsoft added much more support for its UI automation framework, accessibility framework, in Microsoft Office 2013. And look, that has to be commended. That's good, because in general, things will be much more accessible with like Narrator and other automated testing tools, and in theory, NVDA. But because of the history, and this will be the same with all screen readers.
Yes.
Because of the history of Microsoft Office, it really actually throws us around a bit to have that new support. Because, in fact, if you run, say, NVDA 2012.2 with Microsoft Word 2013, it's completely unusable, because mm-hmm. we're just not expecting that support, and it's handled very differently. So we've had to go and, you know, make a few exceptions here and there, and that, you know. But that's fine. You know, we're happy to do that, because obviously progress is good, you know.
Right. Well, let's talk a minute for, again, as far as the development and funding model, mm-hmm. As far as how you determine which new features get added. Obviously, it seems like there's a balance between user feedback and what people are willing to pay for, and how do you make all that work?
Yeah, it's very hard. I mean, in general, again, we try and support the home user as much as possible, because that's sort of the minimum requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll always make sure that there is at least one good word processor, one good web browser, you know, one good email client. So, you know, for instance, you know, we would probably recommend something like Mozilla Thunderbird as probably one of the best email clients to use. However, that's not to say you can't use Outlook or Outlook Express or Windows Mail. And we do try and fix, you know, certain things with those.
Right.
But because Mozilla Thunderbird exists, and it has all the features that, say, the home user or probably student would need, then that's what we'll focus on the most. The same with word processing. Of course, Microsoft Office is very popular, so we have made the promise that we will support Office 2003, 2007, 2010, and we're trying to do 2013 at the moment. And certainly Microsoft Word, Excel, and now PowerPoint. We don't tend to focus much on access at the moment. There haven't been too many requests for it.
Right.
And, you know, obviously funding as well, as we say. But so it's really a matter of making sure that those basic needs are met. You know, as I say, the one word processor, the one email client, whatever. And then, of course, you know, if there is funding for other things, then we'll specifically work on those, obviously, because it's in the interest of us and that company. Should mention also with the word processor, we've always suggested that IBM Lotus Symphony is a pretty good word processor. It's free. Office suite, I should say.
Right.
Because it does have a spreadsheet thing as well and things like that. But now, some pretty good news coming from the OpenOffice front. OpenOffice had always supported Java Access Bridge, but it, you know, really wasn't the best thing.
Right.
There were many problems. I mean, as a blind person, it was almost impossible to get it installed by yourself because you needed to go into OpenOffice and turn on Java support. They've got to go into it blind, excuse the pun, and then, and you know, turn on Java support. Or sometimes there are some registry files and stuff floating around which may help you with that. But the point is, it's all really messy and
right.
things. And even the Java support wasn't crash hot. But now what's happened is because Oracle has donated OpenOffice to the Apache Foundation, and also IBM have donated their Lotus Symphony code, which was based on OpenOffice, again to Apache OpenOffice. So this means that now the accessibility support, the really good accessibility support we've seen in IBM Lotus Symphony through iAccessible 2, is now starting to be integrated right into OpenOffice. Ah. Which means that, so there are some, you know, for the people who want to live on the bleeding edge, you can get some builds of OpenOffice now, test builds with the accessibility support in it already. And this means you don't need to install Java anymore, Java Access Bridge, no need for any of that. It just will work out of the box with NVDA, which is really, really exciting. And it's going to be, look, you know, there's a bit of a way to go because, you know, obviously they're
sure.
moving it from one old product to another, and there's a few things they've got to fix up. But iAccessible 2, I think, is very well proven to be a great accessibility API through the way that Mozilla Firefox uses it. I mean, that's the only way that NVDA gets access to it. And so, you know, knowing the great support that NVDA can get from Firefox, having that kind of support now in OpenOffice will mean, you know, really rich support for Office, the same as what you've seen in Lotus Symphony, but the potential to be much better as well because although Lotus Symphony was free, it wasn't open source. But now, because OpenOffice is completely open source, anyone can contribute, I mean, including, you know, NVAccess or whatever. You know, we can now, you know, I mean, obviously, we had a relationship with IBM in the past and we could report bugs and things, but now we can actually fiddle with the code ourselves. You know, I mean, if we've got the time or whatever, we know how to fix it or whatever, we can go in and do it. So I'm really, really excited about the fact that there will really now be you know, a free Office suite, which everyone is, you know, a lot of people now around the world are already using and know quite well, you know, it's going to be accessible. I think that's great. And we've waited many years for this.
Yeah.
I remember coming to CSUN in 2008, having an iAccessible 2 panel or whatever, and talking about OpenOffice and the fact that IBM was going to donate the code. And congratulations to them now in 2013.
5 years later, but hey, you know.
But it really is good, and I think that, you know, we'll be keeping tabs on that and making sure that it really is moving forward.
Sure. One more thing, I guess, that we need to cover as much as I reluctantly need to ask, but about Windows 8 support. Well, so what have you done, or where are you at with that? What are some of the challenges, and is this limited to just the desktop operating system? Are you dealing with touch screens as well? Or?
Yeah, so there's a few issues. Okay, so firstly, we first got a look at Windows 8, obviously, with all the other developers back in September last... Sorry, the year before last... and that was through their developer preview from Microsoft, and that was great because it gave us a sort of a general view of what work needed to be done. Obviously, Microsoft still needed to do a lot of work after that,
yeah.
But it gave us a good idea of what we needed to do because there were a lot of changes we needed to make in one particular area. Look, so first and foremost, Windows 8 can be used the same way that, say, Windows 7 is used with NVDA. It's pretty much the same. There's not much different. And we worked pretty much out of the box in that September when the developer preview came out. Where we didn't work, and probably this is the truth with all other screen readers as well, was their new, what are they calling it now? The UI something.
Oh, yeah, because they changed their names. It wasn't Metro.
Yeah, exactly. It was Metro, but then something else. But the point is this sort of new full screen sort of web type interface where you can get these. I don't know if I'm allowed to call them apps. I don't know. from the Windows Store.
Trademark or something.
You can download them from, you know, or buy them from the Windows Store, and you can install them. So, you know, you've got your Skype and all that available, and of course there's a few built-in mail and calendar and things like that. But the issue with these, from a screen reader point of view, is that although it did sort of use some well-known technology, sort of MS-HTML, which is sort of the same thing that Internet Explorer uses, but sort of underneath there are a few different toolkits. So the accessibility support was a little bit different. And of course, on that side, that's up to Microsoft and the other product vendors to get that one right. But as far as NVDA was concerned, there were quite a few security precautions that Microsoft had put in place, obviously, because now you've got this sort of Windows Store where people are supposed to be able to trust the stuff they're getting. It had to be much, much more secure than what people were used to on their desktop. But this caused a big problem for screen readers, because a lot of the hacks and advanced things that we were doing previously to get access to even something as simple as speaking typed characters or our display models, of course, you know, things like that, just couldn't work anymore in the Metro or UI thing because of the security. So I had to work very closely. I'd like to thank Microsoft for actually providing some very useful information and constantly answering you know, emails from me about the stuff, because it was very, very tricky work, and I had to pretty much, to be honest, rewrite most of the in-process stuff we had for NVDA, because what used to be true now wasn't.
Right.
You know, so we had to come up with some very different ways. But look, we got it done, and now you do have your speak typed characters, you do have virtual buffers, so your browse mode in these applications. It's still rough around the edges, I will admit. And that's because I think this is an industry problem, because everyone's going to need to standardize a lot more on how these Windows Store apps are written. Microsoft isn't going to need to do a bit of work to identify when something should be an application and when something should be a document. So via using ARIA and things like that to make it much more clear. Because, you know, it's very even hard just with the mail app. Is it an application or is it a web page? I'd like to think of it as an application, but the problem is that there's a few things that are a bit inaccessible in there, and you know, maybe it might be better as a web page. So there's still a long way to go with things like that.
So all of the Windows 8 laptops this year are going to have touchscreen support.
Yes. So the answer is for that, yes, we do support touchscreens. We did some work. I'd like to actually thank Samsung for donating a Samsung Slate PC to NVAccess, which allowed us to work on the initial touchscreen support. So back, we did this around maybe June last year. So with that touchscreen, it was great because I could finally, you know, test all the stuff, work out how we were going to support it. So the way we support touchscreens is very much like iOS. You've got your gestures to sort of move your object navigation around, or of course you can move your finger around the screen and just read the text wherever it is as well. It's also, of course, similar to what what Microsoft is doing themselves with Narrator in Windows 8. So, you know, it's fair, you know, to be fair, we need to mention that out of the box with Windows 8, you can use Narrator, and you do have touchscreen support and all that. And look, they really have improved even their web support and things like that. And it's really great to see, because, of course, NVAccess has always admitted that, you know, if Microsoft had a fully fledged screen reader out of the box, which was perfect, we wouldn't exist.
Right.
We're happy to say that, you know, but that's not the case. Narrator still has some way to go, and I get the feeling from Microsoft that they probably won't be pushing too much further. You know, they'll support probably their inbuilt apps, But even, you know, using Narrator with Microsoft Office is still questionable, things like that.
Sure.
You know, so there's still a place for NVDA so and other.
Do they create an overlay for the touchscreen, you know, similar to iOS or Android, where you can, like, you can explore the screen without activating icons?
Yes, okay. Yes, it's the same. So we're all doing exactly the same idea because it works, I guess. All our gestures are slightly different, iOS, Android, NVDA,
yep.
and Narrator. But look, you know, it's in our user guide and things like that. It does mention all the gestures. I also did a demo of the early touchscreen support on the NV Access podcast in June or so last year as well. So, yeah, look, it's possible to use NVDA with a touchscreen on Windows 8. Mm-hmm. But look, to be honest, even I personally wouldn't be using it all the time for my day-to-day work. It's because Windows is very complex. It's much more complex than iOS. And so finding what you need to just... I think there's still a way to go, you know,
right.
to working out for all of us in the industry.
Well, it's like any new operating system.
Exactly.
Especially if you're using it for day-to-day use, you generally don't want to upgrade on day one. You kind of want to wait.
No, I mean, well, okay, actually, to be clear, I actually do use Windows 8 day-to-day use. I'm happy doing that. It's actually...
And that's working out for you well.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's the touchscreen. It's more...
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, just the touchscreen. So it's more the fact that, you know, am I happy to walk around, you know, go around with a laptop or a you know, pad or whatever with no external keyboard? The answer for me is no, I do feel a little uncomfortable. I could probably listen to music. I can certainly surf the web with the touchscreen, read the news. But, you know, if I'm going to be doing my day-to-day work, mm-hmm. I'd still prefer an actual keyboard.
How does this all relate to Surface and RT and all these other... variants that Microsoft is playing with here.
Yep. Okay, look, so the rule of thumb here is that the device you want to run NVDA on with Windows 8 must be have an Intel chip, so or an x86 or x64 compatible. So that means that the original Surface that came out from Microsoft, I think it was mid last year maybe August or whatever, that won't work with NVDA. There's nothing we can do about that, nothing that any other screen reader manufacturer can even do about it. It's locked down. I believe it's an agreement between Microsoft and ARM for security purposes. I don't agree with it, but that's just what it is. I believe you can run Narrator on them, but you won't be able to run any other AT on them.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how
right.
it is. There may be some ATs that will get written specifically to access some of the sort of Metro-style apps. You know, like there might be a cool, I don't know, you know, magnifier or something for those apps like that. That's probably possible. But writing a fully-fledged screen reader to also access the desktop is completely out of the question. The APIs just aren't there. So that's the story with the Surface. The Surface Pro, which... Is that out yet? I don't know.
I can't get it. They're changing software.
Sorry. The Surface Pro, because I believe that has an Intel chip, you can run NVDA on that. So that's good to hear. There's also, of course, this Samsung Slate PC that we use, and that works rather well.
Mm-hmm.
You can put NVDA on that. There's also... Someone was trying to tell me there was an Acer or Asus... one of those two that has a tablet out. But look, the rule is x86 or x64 Intel chip, can't be ARM.
Sure.
Have
you heard many rumblings, and it's probably one of those rumor mill things, about if Windows is going to merge the desktop and phone operating system, because of course Windows Phone is nothing right now.
Yeah, look, I would have hoped. I always had the dream, and people were always telling, even Jamie was saying, yeah, whatever, dream on, because, you know, we'd heard that Windows Phone was close to Windows 8, and there's a Windows Phone 8, and it's getting closer and closer, and even if you look at what they're doing within Windows 8, it's becoming more friendly for touchscreens. It looks nicer for a phone-type device.
Mm-hmm.
I was always hoping that they would merge the two, and yes, then you would just have the normal Windows 8 in your phone. I mean, because there's no reason why a phone can't have an Intel chip in it. You know, there's some pretty... I mean, I guess ARM is probably better for power consumption, but I'm pretty sure Intel's getting up there and would want to. So, look, if it happens, we'll be ready. I mean, as soon as an Intel... Okay, what needs to happen, you know, if there is a phone out there with an Intel chip on it and someone works out a way to put Windows 8 on it, We'll work on it already. Mm-hmm. Out of the box.
Oh, sure.
You need to put NVIDIA.
Yes. Well, yeah.
But you know, that's how it is, really. So we'll just see what Microsoft does. I mean, I believe that they're not doing it at the moment, and that's sort of clear from because they have their Windows 8 RT version. So at the moment, there's three versions. You've got your Windows Phone 8, your Windows RT, 8 RT, and Windows 8 Desktop. So that's the problem. There's three different versions. They'd all have to merge into the one,
right?
For that to happen. But look, you know, hey, happy to see it happen one day.
Sure. So looking back on over the past few years, give me some thoughts on the project in general. Like, did you imagine being in this, you know, position at this point, you know, several years later since the beginnings of NVIDIA?
Yeah, look, I've always had, I myself, obviously, I started it originally in 2006. I always had high hopes for it myself. I think a lot of that in the beginning was ignorance, but then on the other hand, looking at where we are now, well, maybe it wasn't, because people have got behind the project. It's a community effort. I mean, although, you know, NVAccess does most of the development work, and obviously we manage all the, you know, getting in all the funding and all that. Yeah. But
people back then, a lot of people wrote it off. I mean, they didn't think it was going to go anywhere, or wasn't going to.
Yeah, and I mean, I can understand. I mean, you know, if I wasn't part of the project, I probably would have had similar theories back then, because you had screen readers that work well or whatever, and if you could afford what you needed, then great. But the fact is that there are many people who can't. And I mean, I'm not just talking about, you know, people maybe who are unemployed in the US or Australia or something. We're pretty well done lucky on this, you know, in this part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking more in India or Thailand or African countries. I mean, Jamie and I went to the World Blind Union in November, as I mentioned, and we met so many, you know, wonderful people there who were telling me that they were using NVDA in their communities, their whole communities were, and they needed to. There was no choice. They just couldn't use the other assistive technologies because they were just too expensive. Or let's talk about India for a second. In India, it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. So apparently, off the record, whatever that means, that people had been using illegal versions of certain mm-hmm. screen readers. And because of that, there's obviously no market for that screen reader, even if there was money. The screen reader manufacturer doesn't care anymore because, obviously, everyone's using it illegally. They're not going to support particular Indian languages or other needs culturally for that screen reader. So they have to start using alternatives such as NVDA. And so they have been. And, you know, their NVDA has been used a lot in India. They've even set up a small group in India who is now contributing to NVDA, contributing to the development. So they're finding out, you know, their own sort of funding from the Indian government or wherever. And, you know, getting the show on the road to make sure that NVDA is supported well in India, because the other screen readers, as I've said, for funding, for price reasons or for reasons of legalities, it's just impossible. And these screen reader companies just aren't looking at these countries anymore.
So you're able to cover those underserved markets.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, they're there and they're big. Mm-hmm. I mean, talking even about Taiwan or China, you know, or Hong Kong, these are big, we don't want to say markets because we don't, you know, we're a free mm-hmm. product, but needs, niches, you know. Also, you know, I mean, China, there's 9 million blind people. Imagine that, you know, and most of these people, you know, to be honest, probably can't afford the biggest screen readers. And so that brings me actually to another thing that we'd done last year, is we'd worked very closely with two particular organisations, Taiwan Digital Talking Book Association mm-hmm. and the Hong Kong Blind Union, to get support in NVDA for East Asian languages. So that's Chinese and possibly Japanese as well, because a little bit of background: when you want to type Chinese on a computer, it's not a matter of just pressing one key on a keyboard and that's one character. You press one key and then, you know, it could be, you know, 30 or more characters that pop up in a list, and you've got to choose the right one. And so, you know, the screen reader has to read that list appropriately and in a good way, in a good performant way, that, you know, because there's many different ways to do it. You know, you could just say, oh, just read the whole list from top to bottom, whatever. But you got to think about this. People are typing, they're trying to type really, really fast, and every key they type will come up with another set of characters. So you've got to be really, you know, make sure that you've tailored it very well to what people, you know, in China or Taiwan
or whatever
they need.
As efficiently
exactly,
as anybody
exactly.
Else.
That's yeah. right. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, so that's the kind of work, thanks to the funding from these two companies, we've been able to do that work. And I think we're pretty well set with 2012.3. I think everyone was pretty happy with the support we managed to get. So now, really now, if you use NVDA on any Windows system, so that's XP 7 or 8, I believe, you can type in Chinese in many of the different input styles, because there are also, you know, different ways of typing Chinese as well, right, to make it more complicated. And that was a lot of work for us, testing all the different frameworks and things. But I think we got there. And so now, you know, NVDA is now available for the whole Chinese community.
Sure.
And of course, you know, if you look at the vocalizer voices, you've got Chinese voices there. They've got their own voices as well, mm-hmm. in China and Taiwan. So it's a full package. You can now with NVDA do that. And we're working very closely, of course, sort of with a community effort in Japan as well. There's a guy, Takuya Nishimoto, who's very good in Japan. He's contributed a lot of his time and effort to making sure that NVDA works well with Japanese as well. At the moment, they still have their own Japanese version of NVDA, but we're working together very hard to decrease the difference between the two products and integrate all the support for Japanese into NVDA itself. Because, look, yeah, we really want a multilingual, multicultural NVDA that anyone around the world can use, because, you know, NVDA, as I said, is very important in the developing countries and any non-English speaking countries, just because of the fact that the other screen reader is just too expensive. And, you know,
right. Sure. So you, of course, you talk a lot about funding and support. So how can people get more information, or perhaps if they want to think about funding some development?
Yeah, look, for a general user, if you go to our NVDA website, which is www.nvda-project.org, you can, obviously from there, you can download NVDA, but you can also click through to donate to NV Access, which is the non-profit Australian charity that Jamie and I and a few others have set up to support NVDA. If you make a donation to NV Access, you really are contributing to the support of NVDA, and allow us to continue doing what we're doing and making sure that we can offer NVDA for free to those who need it. And we'd obviously encourage anyone to donate what they can, or even consider being a monthly subscriber if they can. You know, even just $10 a month or something, you know, that's not much, but mm-hmm. it really, you know, if, you know, say if 1,000 people did it, and I mean, look, at minimum, we know we have, you know, around 10,000 users or more. NVIDIA has been downloaded over about 60,000 times, but
right.
let's take all the multiple downloads and stuff out of the equation. So let's, you know, be fair and say 10,000. You know, if even, you know, a tenth of those people were to donate $10 a month or something, you know, we'd be really set. You know, we'd be able to, you know, we'd have no hassles, and we'd be developing right. NVDA into the, you know, distant future.
Is there a number, an annual number that you need to get to, or?
Oh, look, you know, talking on budget terms, I mean, obviously you'd understand that we also get support from corporates.
Sure.
Right? We're always looking for more mm-hmm. of that. Our budget right now, which is a real shoestring budget, we're looking at $250,000 to run
sure.
everything, all the servers.
But obviously, with more, you could
everything.
Do more.
Yeah, look, I mean, consultants and stuff have told us it should be about $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that would allow us to get some more developers. We need a full-time admin person. We don't have that. Jamie and I together do the development, the accounting, the admin, the business side of things, you know, the charitable stuff. You know, we do everything, and it's very, very hard to manage all that work. We really need to get some more people in on this. So, look, your support is, you know, anyone's support is very much appreciated.
Well, definitely a lot of interesting things going on, and I definitely look forward to future developments.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast.
Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys. Copyright 2013.